Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are just as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They're milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hello and welcome back to the Sunday special episode of the U Up Podcast. I'm Jordana Abraham.
And I am Jared Freed. Jordana, we are joined by a very special guest today. I know you're very excited. You are a fan. Not to say that I'm not a fan, but you are a consumer of their work. Yeah, you read and I don't. So
yes.
Jordana, you want to introduce them?
So we are joined today by Dr. Meg Jay. She's a clinical psychologist, associate professor of human development at the University of Virginia, and author of The Defining Decade, all about how to make the most out of your 20s. And I just finished this book, so I'm so excited to talk to you about it. Welcome.
Wonderful. So thank you for having me. Great to be here.
Great to have you.
Yeah, I read the book. All the 20-somethings in the Betches office were like, this book, you know, is like life-changing, and it has all these like really interesting concepts and things to think about. And so we wanted to have you on. And I checked that and I was like, oh, it's too late for me. I'm 31.
Well, let's start there, right? It's never too late. We all just start where we are. But yeah, I thought, let me target the 20-somethings. The book's all about adult development. So I thought I'd start with the youngest adults, but everything in there is still relevant at 31 and 35 and 39. I mean, it's still the way life works.
Totally.
It's got to be awkward to talk to someone and be like, oh, you're 36. Okay, well...
Sorry, yeah, I got you nothing could've done. For you. Yeah.
I do think it's interesting to target that year, those years. It's interesting to me that, like, I remember graduating college and in 2007, and I'm thinking, man, no one really, everyone's like, oh, 18, you become an adult, and you go, and that was kind of what we were still living by at that time. And then, you know, the whole idea, I remember, of the quarter life crisis became a very pop culture term around mm-hmm. that time. And like, you start to notice like people freaking out.
Right.
And also my parents and most parents, I think if it was mine, then mine aren't that different than everyone else. Everyone's parents was like, you didn't really understand this like 22 to 26 year old era of like freak out,
right?
You know, because they were like, no, we were 18 then adults. And it's like, it feels like there was a change at some point. Did you see that?
Well, yeah, there's definitely been a change in the last couple of generations, last few decades, what are called like the adult milestones of, you know, figuring out what you're going to do for a living and finding a partner and buying a house and picking a city. All that has moved up into the later 20s. And I pass no judgment on that. I'm just saying that's the way it is now. And
that's so comforting to hear, I'm sure, for people, though. Like, you know,
yeah, you're not behind if you haven't got all that figured out. Absolutely. Yeah. But what that means is that in your early 20s, there's a lot of uncertainty of, I don't have any of that. I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't know who I'm going to be. I don't know if I'll be alone forever. So it makes it extremely anxiety provoking, and people, you know, want direction.
Right. And I feel like the interesting thing about this book is you see, like you write in the book that, oh, there's all these articles about how, you know, like 24 is the new 18, or like, you know, all these things about how like your 20s don't really matter. It's really your 30s that matter. The 20s are a time for sort of just like finding yourself and exploring and doing whatever. And I think your argument, which is sort of a refreshing thing to hear, is kind of like, don't have that mindset, because in your 30s, you're just going to have to do what you should have been doing in your 20s, which is like trying to actually figure out what you want to do and what your life is. And the 20s are the time for like actually, it's not like a time to just like chill.
Right.
It's a time to actually like experiment to find out what you actually want to set yourself up for to be successful in your 30s and beyond.
Right. So with, you know, the adult milestones moving closer to 30, that's where the whole like, oh, 30 is the new 20. What I do in my 20s doesn't matter anymore. But the whole argument of the defining decade is we actually now, for the first time in history, relatively speaking, have a chance to get in front of all those milestones and try them out and really explore and really experiment and, you know, fail early, as they say, if that's what's going to happen. And so, you know, it's actually a really important time where you can find a lot out and get going when the getting is still easier.
So you talk a lot about like career and setting yourself up for career success, but since we are a dating and relationship podcast, nice. I figured we would focus a little bit more on like the love section.
Well, let me tell you, when people come into my office, they really want to talk about love. Okay. Like, I feel like I have to help them get jobs just to, you know, pay the bills and all that, but they want to talk about their relationships. So I'm happy to go there first or completely.
Great. So one thing I wanted to ask you about, I mean, you talk about this concept of like a lot of people dating down in their 20s. Can you explain that to the listeners who might not have read the book yet, or like what that means or how they can avoid that?
Yeah. You know, I mean, what I mean by dating down is dating down to sort of a low version of yourself, or to a kind of a not an ambitious version of what you want in a relationship or where you would like to be with a partner or with partners, you know, 5 years down the line. And so again, I think because, you know, if you're so inclined to choose a partner, people do that a bit later than they used to. So it kind of leads to this mindset of, well, who I date in my 20s or who I hang out with or who I sleep with doesn't really matter, right? Because I'm not marrying this person. I'm not partnering this with this person. But I'll tell you a story about that, which is in the book, that when I was first working with 20-somethings, I had a client who was kind of, she'd come in every week. It'd be like another person was, you know, kind of a not so great relationship after another. And my supervisor pushed me to kind of help her look at that and maybe take her relationships more seriously. And I shrugged it off. I said, well, I mean, it's not like she's marrying the guy. What difference does it make? And she said, well, not yet, but she might partner with the next one. And the best time to work on your marriage or your partnership, whatever floats your boat, is before you have one. And so I think in our 20s, it's really an opportunity not just to not care about our relationships, but to get out there and truly try relationships and see what works for me, what doesn't work for me, what kind of person, what kind of situation. But that's a different mindset than what I do doesn't matter.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It can be easy to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves thin, especially with social gatherings picking up after the winter. What's the right amount of socializing for you? And how do you recharge? Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you need some more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. I've been seeing a therapist for many years now, and one of the things that I've learned from therapy is that I'm pretty introverted, and a lot of the time socializing with people can drain me. So I've really learned how to have that right balance of going out, socializing, meeting people, but also making sure I have enough alone time to actually feel like I'm coming back to myself, because that's kind of where I thrive. And therapy has really helped me realize that. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/UUP today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/UUP. There's no better feeling than spinning around in a salon to see your hair looking absolutely perfect. But it feels impossible to keep up that same look at home. Thanks to Vegamore, sticking to my hair routine has never been easier, and I'm finally seeing the shinier, healthier looking hair I've always wanted. It's like I'm salon fresh every time. I have hair that is pretty thin and hard for me to grow, so I love the hair serum. I love that I can put it in wet hair or dry hair. It doesn't make my hair feel oily. It's a super lightweight serum. I just like the way it feels in my hair, and I love that I'm helping my hair to be healthier and I'm helping it to grow, which are two things I've struggled with for a long time. I am super pumped because I love, love, love these products. Vegamore products are 100% cruelty-free and are never formulated with potentially harmful chemicals like parabens or hormones. When it comes to seeing results, the key is consistency. For best results, use for a minimum of 3 months for visibly fuller, healthier, and thicker looking hair. When I sign up for a monthly subscription, I can get one bottle or three bottles sent. Plus, I save more and I never never run low on the products I need to take care of my hair. Elevate your hair wellness routine this year with Vegamore. For a limited time, get 20% off your first subscription order by going to vegamore.com/UUP and use code UUP at checkout. That's vegamore.com/UUP, code UUP to save 20% on your first order. vegamore.com/UUP, code UUP.
Do you think it's, you said like try relationships. I'm sure there's people listening that are like, I can't
get
to that, you know, like, you know, cause we hear from those people and like, listen, I don't like to live in the negativity. Like that's kind of, I do believe that's kind of a negative mindset. Like if you can't, you're one date away from the relationship that's going to come to you. But at the same time, like if someone's there out there being like, I'm trying to get to the relationships, but these people that I'm dealing with mostly, I would assume, just because this is who we hear from, women thinking these men don't even want to try relationships. They're so afraid of, and again, from the male point of view, I would say afraid of, I don't want to be in a 6-month relationship to have to end it because someone just wants the relationship. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Meaning, and you don't, I mean, that they want the relationship, but I know I really don't.
Yeah, and also they maybe their goal is a relationship, and I'm just here just trying stuff out with them.
You're a relationship and filler.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. And now, you know, a lot of times you get put in the position of like, I have to end it now. Mm. I have to be the one to go, you know, because you're, you know, still trying things out, you know?
Right. Well, you know, I do hear that of people say, but I want to try things out, but I can't even get a date or I can't even find a match or, you know, whatever the case may be. And I mean, I guess sometimes that leads to discussions about where are you looking and how are you looking and who you said these people that I was using your words. So who are these people? Like what, you know, where are you searching? Because if I could get together all the people in my practice who want a relationship but can't find one, I could have my own little mini dating service, male and female, but you know, sometimes they're different ages. I think sometimes with, you know, we're so used to doing everything all growing up with people exactly our same age, but you know, in your 20s and beyond, people's maturity levels or just readiness for different things are different. And so sometimes we have to look outside of our own, you know, quote unquote classroom. It may not be the exact same age of people we've been hanging out with or the same types of people we've been hanging out with, but to maybe broaden our horizons a bit. But I'd be interested to hear what you think about this, Jared, because I've certainly had this conversation a lot with male clients in my practice and then on podcasts, is that I think it is true. Not, I mean, for both, or for all 20 somethings, that work is sort of something that they're more stressed about. They feel like I have to figure this out before I try to add a relationship to this. And so I hear that a bit more from men than from women. And I think that can cause some of the disconnect of women saying, I think I could have a relationship also. And more men saying, I really need to nail this work thing first. But I'd be curious about your thoughts on that.
Yeah, my belief, we've talked about it a few times on this show, but like, you know, men are kind of in this position societally, whether that's fair or not, like of being a provider. And if you're not a provider, you're a loser. And most relationships end because of money. Mm. So one leads to the next. They're kind of connected. And I think, you know, men kind of see that as like, as long as I'm comfortable with where my career is heading and I can see a path as far as, you know, money is concerned and you know, the ability to provide and the ability to like do those things, then a relationship becomes easier to concentrate on. I can make promises to someone. You know, sometimes it feels like you're making promises you can't keep. You know, when you enter into like, hey, let's get in a relationship, because relationships cost money. You know, just like, when's the next date? When's the next trip? When's the next, you know, the engagement, the ring? You know, like, it's not like, you know, I would love for us to get to a place where women are getting on their knee to give me a rock. But,
hey, I suggest it. I really do. But, but you know, I think what you're saying is so true. The more things change, the more they stay the same. And, you know, Jordana, you read the book, you know, I wrote in there about, you know, there's some gender norms that really, they just resist disruption. And, you know, one of those is that, oh, you know, when push comes to shove, men get pushed into the position of, well, you know, you're the primary breadwinner, and women get pushed into the position of, you should probably like drive carpool or cook dinner. And I really think those things need to change. But I see that in the 20s, and maybe one way to do this is to help both men and women think about, how can I have work? How can I have love? Because I mean, these days, most everybody is going to have to work, male, female, any combination. Sure. And, you know, most people want to find love. And so maybe that sort of linear approach, you know, isn't necessary in terms of work first, then love.
I would also say, like, less stereotypical is, like, a lot of times we hear from women, like, does he like me? So I, like, a lot of times men are put in the driver's seat of, like,
oh, yeah,
should we do a relationship or not?
Right.
And instead of the other way around, which is, listen, I don't think that's fair or good or bad or whatever. It's just what it is, you know, like where it's like, hey, you know, should we go to the next step? And it's like, okay, well, do you want to go to the next step? You know, it right. becomes all on
absolutely
one side a lot of times.
It's so true. And I think it's harmful, you know, and it's interesting for, you know, gay and lesbian clients. It's interesting. They can't really fall back on this, you know, who goes first, who does what, you know, they got to work it out because there aren't these kind of gender stereotypes to fall back on. But I do see a lot in straight relationships, the women, it's like, they're sort of waiting, just like you said, to find out, am I wanted? Have I been promoted? You know, are we going to the next level? They're just waiting. And that's all they need. And then sometimes they aren't asking themselves, do I want? Okay, so this person wants me. Do I want them? Or do I want to be promoted? Or do I want to promote this person? Should I have the conversation? And I really would like to see all that move in a lot of different directions instead of just one way.
Right. Well, I feel like part of the reason that that occurs also just like this, that men and women are just in different places biologically in their 20s, where I think women get the message, and to an extent it's true, that like their time is not endless to get into that relationship and, you know, have children or start a family. And I think for men, there's no sense of like, well, I don't want to be the last one married. I don't think many men have that feeling of like, am I going to be able to have kids if I'm with someone and it's okay, but it's not great. Like, I still have this other thing about like time that's not on my side. Like, so I do feel like maybe that I would imagine that would contribute to the difference in like the women wanting to know, like, is it, you know, like choose me because they have less time.
Right. I'm feeling a sense of urgency here that maybe you're not. Well, you know, it's interesting. I talk in the defining decade about, you know, aging and eggs, but also sperm, right? Because it does go both ways. We only hear the messages that like, oh, you know, women better watch out. But I think both men and women need to educate themselves about their bodies and how they work. And, you know, when is the best time biologically to try to have kids, depending on how many and if you want any. But yeah, I do think, and in some ways it's very healthy because that women do get that urgency of, hey, I don't have all day here. And urgency can be helpful to get people going into things that, you know, they ultimately do want. And so, you know, I see a bit of an upside in their feeling like there's somewhat of a cutoff point of, I don't have all day to figure out my career and everything else. I need to start putting some pieces together.
Right. And for me, I think when dating in my 20s, that was sort of like the thing in the back of my mind, or the idea like, because again, I think there is this sense of like, oh, 20s should just be like, you should be the cool girl in your 20s who's just down for whatever, who's like open to just like sleeping with someone who doesn't necessarily like text you back or treat you well. Mm-hmm. But we're young. And so like, why? And a guy would say, you know, like, what, we have fun. Isn't that all that, like, we're so young, we're having fun. Like, who cares? But I do think that there is, like you wrote in the book, a sense of like, that's not really the case, because it, even if you are, you should be having fun, you should still be having fun with the intention of figuring out what you like and don't like so that you can set yourself up for a relationship that's real and respectful and becomes like a long-term stable thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, if that's what you want. And I think, you know, there's some cool research about time perspective, which really interests me, and that the happiest, most successful people spend about half their time thinking about the present and about the other half of their time thinking about the future. And so, you know, I think we get the message a lot in your 20s of, oh, have fun while you can. These are the best years of your life. I tell all my clients, if these turn out to be the best years of your life, something has gone terribly wrong that, you know, you did not set yourself up for happy. I mean, I want you to be happy in your 20s, but as someone who's way out of their 20s, I want you to be happy. Trust me, you're going to want it too in your 30s, 40s, 50s. You're still going to want good things for yourself. And so it's a matter of, sure, you know, do what's... what are those unique opportunities for fun or exploration in your 20s? But, you know, I had a client once who said, I mean, I had fun doing all that, but did I need to do it for 8 years? And I thought that was a good question.
You guys know I'm a huge fan of Skims, and with warmer weather coming, I recently tried out one of their t-shirts. Skims makes the best basics and foundations, so it's no surprise that it's the best fitting tee I've ever worn. Finding the perfect t-shirt can be such a challenge, whether it's the fit or the quality, but with Skims, they make the most flattering shirts for everyone. I love anything that Skims makes. They have like the most incredible material. I have the soft, smoothing, seamless t-shirt in Onyx. It is so amazing. It has like amazing versatility. I wear it to dress up. I wear it to dress down. I just wore it to the airport. It was like a great shirt to wear that was like super comfy on the plane, but also super flattering. And I also tried the cotton jersey t-shirt. As cotton t-shirts go, it is incredible. It's honestly like a step up for any other cotton t-shirt that I own. It hits me at all of the right places and it fits like a dream. Skims t-shirts are made with innovative technology while always keeping style and comfort in mind. From crop silhouettes to long sleeve layering tees, Skims has something for every fit and every body. Shop the Skims t-shirt shop at skims.com, now available in sizes extra, extra small to 4X. If you haven't yet, be sure to let them know we sent you. After you place your order, select podcast in the survey and select our show in the drop-down menu that follows.
Rebag is a luxury resale marketplace. They have a curated collection of investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry. Each piece is carefully vetted and verified by experts. You can buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10.
Jared and I were actually talking about this the other day when we were talking about like setups or like ways to meet people. And you talked about something called weak ties.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was what it's called. I think you were talking more about career, but do you think you could use that, for dating in terms of meeting people or getting out there?
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. So, one of the concepts in the book, and this is not mine, I'm a medium here. I'm just kind of getting the word out there to people who could use it, but it's called the strength of weak ties. And it's what are the benefits or, what do people have to offer us that people we don't know well, not our best friends and family, but those acquaintances or our cousin we never talked to, or that person from our yoga class we never go out with, or the old roommate we used to have that we kind of keep in touch with. But what we know about those are called weak ties is that that's where new things come from, right? That you probably have your core group that you talk to all the time. And there's probably not a lot new that they have to say or that they know, or even new people that they know. But when we get out of that kind of strong ties network and get into our weak ties network, they open doors to all sorts of new information, opportunities, and opportunities, broadly of new jobs, new apartments, new ideas, new people to date, that very often this is actually where people's sort of new opportunities in terms of, you know, finding someone who might be looking for what they're looking for comes from. No, in theory, that's what dating sites are all about. But as we all know, sometimes they work that way and sometimes they don't. But I do think weak ties is a great way to sort of, for the people who are saying, yeah, but I can't meet anybody. Like, there's nobody out there. You might want to try to do some things you don't normally do and see what where that may lead.
I love this so much, and I think this gets glazed over, the idea of weak ties, so much, because when it does work out, you kind of don't even think about that, like, it was this middle person. Yes. It wasn't my best friend, but my best friend introduced me to this person who ended up being the reason things in my life happened. Like, you don't think about
it. You don't. That is, it's so true. I've given a million talks about this since the first version of the book came out. And everyone in the audience, you know, I'll say, think about, how did you get that recommendation for, you know, or how did you hear about a certain job, or how did you find out about your apartment, or how did you hear about the university you went to? And it'll be like, you know, there was this person at my school who said this about that, or it was, you know, this woman who lived two apartments down and we started talking in the hall one day. That so much of what's new in our lives, it almost always comes from weak ties.
It's also really easier. Like I you know, doing comedy, I'm in a relationship business, and that all that, like, you can remember everyone who's done you a favor. And it's always, and even when I do someone a favor, it always feels easier when I'm not as close with them. Like, when I'm close with them, the favor feels like, oh my God.
It's so like much riding on this now.
Yeah. And our relationship rides on it. I have to be in constant contact with them. But when it's like someone that I'm like, I like, but I would never call to hang out, like, I'm happy to do the favor, but I'm also happy to not have to deal with the favor.
Right.
You could just like do it and then they take it from there.
Right.
Take
like
it
that,
from
those
there.
Emails that are like, I'll let the two of you take it from here.
Right. Well,
it's an easier email.
Yeah. You know, I had actually, Jared, never thought about that piece before, but you're so right of that. You know, there's all this research about altruism and doing nice things for people. It makes people feel good. And one of the reasons, or one of the ways that works, is when those nice things, they feel sort of quick and easy, you know? I mean, that's different than like helping someone, you know, move their apartment or whatever. And so I experience that all the time. People write me all the time about the defining decade, and I try to answer every email. And that takes about 90 seconds for me to do. But I think about, this person has taken their time to track me down and send me an email, and I'm going to send it back. And sometimes they want to know something like, hey, do you know a good grad program for social work or whatever? And if I can make suggestions, I will. And it's so easy and it feels great. And I can just send the email and be done with it. But you never know what that has opened up for the other person. Like, it feels very serendipitous and it's really great.
Yeah, I because I'm thinking right now, like, I love coming up with stupid solutions to big problems people have.
Nice.
Like, I think stupid solutions, like, whether they're, when we did this last episode where I would pitch Jordana stupid ideas, and then maybe we come up with a better idea. But, like,
nice.
I think, like, the strength of weak ties to me is, like, such an important relationship dating thing that, like, what do we think of this, okay?
All right,
what
ready.
If everyone, and this is going to be an idea that people are going to shudder at, okay? And I know the listeners. What if someone who's single, they're like, I don't know what to do. They just post on Facebook, hey, I'm single. Anyone know someone? Like, Facebook is the land of weak ties at this point. Facebook isn't your best friend. But, and then slide in my DMs if you know anyone. Like, wouldn't that be like a great way to like kind of just like, let's shake this up kind of?
I mean, I don't think it's a stupid idea at all. Someone's probably listening and they're going to go make like $1 billion off of it. It won't be me because I'm a psychologist, not a business person. But yeah, that's exactly the way it works. And I had so many people write to me after they read The Defining Decade and said, I read the book and I learned about weak ties. And then I noticed either, you know, ways I could start using them, or just these complete one-offs where somebody, you know, from Craigslist came to look at their apartment because they were moving, and they bothered to strike up a conversation and then talked about work and then found out about, you know, hey, have you heard of the such and such company? And I mean, that's how it works with, you know, relationships all the time. But I love that of post it on Facebook and say, Anybody got any ideas? And
my brother, actually, I remember some like influencer on Instagram, posted that her sister was single. And, you know, and if anyone, you know what I mean? If anyone was interested, and she described her sister a little bit. And I think my brother wound up like going out with her.
Oh, wow.
Not that it worked out, but I just think it's like, it's the kind of thing where it's like anything that sort of like brings you to someone's top of mind, because right. they know that you have a problem. And then if they see a solution, you're just increasing the amount of people where if they see a solution, they'll let you know.
Right. Absolutely.
And so many times we get emails where it's like, all my friends are married and no one knows anybody. And you go, right. Yeah, it sounds like they know you because we know you, and I don't want to fix you up right now either. You know, like,
I'll have clients say, everyone I know has a baby. And I'll say, statistically speaking, I find that very difficult to believe, because this person will be like 25 and I know this is not true. So then we start thinking about, is that really true? And, you know, who doesn't have a baby, and how maybe you spend some time with them and not start to feel like they're the only one left standing. And
the further you go down 95 is the more that becomes the response, right. You know, like the further we go to, true. You know, New York to Virginia down to, yep. you know, South Carolina, everyone's like, everyone's married. Everyone has a baby. Everyone's doing a christening. And you're like, that can't be. It's just not true. It's right. just not, you know, that's just not the case.
You're funny. You actually hit all my high spots. So I live in Virginia. I'm from South Carolina. And then I work a lot in New York with publishing. So I get all those places, and you nailed it. The further South Carolina by 25, you do start feeling like everybody I know has a baby. But I'd moved to Berkeley by then. So that was not the case there at all.
Doesn't have a baby.
It's funny that... It's funny that at 25, if you weren't married like 100 years ago, you were just done.
You had to move to a different country, or just like
it's really all relative.
Yeah,
you could go to Berkeley. It's about the only place you could go.
Should we do? We have an email from a listener that's really about a lot of these topics. Can we read it and get your take on it?
Sure. Yeah.
Let's do it. You want me to read it, Jordana?
Yeah. Why don't you read it?
Okay. It's called, Is It Even Worth It to Date in Your Early 20s? What would you... Okay, so...
Okay, yes.
I don't have to read the email.
Yes.
Yes. Well, okay. You have someone come in, and that's the first thing they say to you. What do you say to that person?
You know, so much of it is getting a read on people, but since I've been sitting here chatting with you, you know how I said, short answer, yes. Proceed. I would say short answer, yes, but why are you asking me this?
Where'd this come from?
Yeah. So, right. So, you know, maybe the email says more.
All right, let's go. Hi, J&J. I've been binging the pod in quarantine. Love all the discussion about couples moving in together amidst Corona. My question is about some of Jared's comments. Uh-oh. let's get the stenographer out. Jared's comments about dating in university and how it's kind of like playing house. I'm a recent graduate, and I've been dating a guy for about 6 months, and all is well. I even met his family during a birthday FaceTime call, and we have been staying in each other's places about 6 days a week since COVID ramped up. As things get more serious with him, I'm kind of wondering if it's even worth dating, falling for, meeting families, etc., with something that's just based on numbers alone you probably won't marry. We both went through breakups last summer, started hooking up in October after meeting at a party, i.e. we weren't actively seeking a relationship. And things escalated smoothly from there. I really like this guy, but who knows where I'll be in a few months, let alone a few years as I get a career off the ground and he finishes law school. Should people in their early 20s stick to casual sex until they are financially independent and have careers somewhat established? I see a potential future with this guy, but I don't want to be naive. Is it cynical to shut down my feelings because I know things likely won't last? Loved your live show. Love you guys as a team. Love hearing about your relationships, and thanks in advance for the insight. So, what do we think?
Cool. Can you say the person's first name?
We don't get into names. Okay, protect the innocent.
Okay. And the guilty, right?
and the guilty.
And especially the guilty. Yeah.
Okay, so that person could have been my client this morning or later this afternoon. I mean, this is, you know, we live in each other's worlds here, but mine is kind of behind closed doors. So what I hear the person doing is time traveling. I mean, it's what clinicians call time traveling, where she's rushing into the future. What if this? What if I do it? It doesn't work out. What if they want to go to law school on the other side of the country? What if, what if, what if? And that usually isn't helpful because we can't predict the future. We don't know what's going to happen. So I really am more interested with clients, not in are you 22 or are you 29? Because technically, I'm not sure how much that matters, as much as what's the quality of this relationship right now? And it sounds like, if I was catching everything you were saying, the person sounds pretty happy. It sounds pretty good. It sounds like, you know, they're not unhappy with their situation. They're just worried it isn't going to work out. And so for me, I would say, forget about the numbers, forget about the statistics, forget about that you're 22, but if you're happy with something and it feels like it has potential and you want to keep doing it, then you keep doing it and you'll find out in 6 months or 3 years, whether or not that's really still the case. But not to get too hung up on, there's stuff in there around like, well, I'm 22, I'm too young, this couldn't possibly work out. And I've actually gotten a lot of emails from readers over the years saying the defining decade sort of helped them shake that off a little bit and realize, you know, it's okay to want a relationship and to find a relationship when I'm in my 20s. Like, I don't have to wait until I'm 30 to do this.
Do you ever, on the flip side of that, get any emails or have any clients who are maybe did settle? I think people have this fear of, oh, I met someone in college, or I'm still with my high school boyfriend and I just don't know. And it's going well, but I don't feel like I've dated enough people. How do I know?
Right.
You know?
Well, as a matter of fact, an old client of mine was driving through town yesterday and came by to see me. And she's a perfect example of someone who in college, I felt like dated people who were just not matching her in terms of where she was going in life. And I was extremely clear about that because I felt like, well, if I'm not going to say it, then who's going to say it? And so, you know, I very much said, let's not rush. Let's not settle. I don't think that you're really seeing, you know, how great you are and where you might go in life, and that you're really looking for someone who might go those places with you. And honestly, I think I worked with her 10 years ago and now she's got a partner and, you know, they're happy. But it's a very different sort of person than she was dating in college. I like to believe largely because of my pushy interventions around let's not settle now. You know, there's a lot to still get out there and see and to sort of realize about yourself. I mean, she was a really, really great gal. And I felt like she just hadn't figured that out yet.
So how do you know, like, if you're kind of like this, the emailer who wrote in, who's like, you know, should I end it? Because like, who knows, maybe, I don't know, who knows where they're going to be, but also maybe there's someone else out there for me, versus like, other people who, you know, are dating. How do you know whether to tell someone to stay with someone or to find someone who's going the same places as them?
Well, I have a crystal ball that other people don't have. So that makes it much easier. Now, I mean, usually, honestly, I don't know anything other than what my clients tell me and, you know, 20 years of listening to similar stories. But that person in the email didn't say that. Like, they didn't say, like, I don't really, you know, my friends say he's not really good for me and we fight a lot and I cry. I mean, they weren't saying that. They were saying, right, this seems really good, but I feel like statistically speaking, we're screwed. And I wouldn't necessarily say that's the case for that person. Whereas my old client I was talking about would come in and talk about ways in which the relationship really wasn't making her happy. And so that's definitely a time where I say, well, let's not lock this thing down now. You know, don't settle.
This is kind of, to defend myself a little with my question about some of Jared's comments.
Yeah, I didn't remind me
that dating in university and how it's kind of playing house. Like, I think that goes along with what you're saying, Dr. J, where it's like, you know, they're referencing relationships statistically don't work out. It's like, yeah, that's exactly the case. Most relationships don't work out. That's just how the numbers go. But that's a reason to drop a bad relationship, not a reason to drop a good one.
Absolutely. You know? Right.
So, So it's like, I think that they're kind of like flipping around. They're taking the numbers, Jared says they play house, and saying, well, everything here something must be wrong here, you know, that I'm not seeing. And it's like, if you don't see it, it ain't there, you know, like if I looked at their relationship, I'd be like, this is all screwed up. But one person's screw up is another person's, you know, perfect home.
Absolutely. Right. And they just need to find each other. Exactly. But, yeah, I mean, I think that what I love about 20-somethings is it's such a diverse group of people that you just can't say, well, 22-year-olds are like this and 29-year-olds are like that. And, you know, 25-year-olds are like this or 31-year-olds are like that. I mean, I think for things that are working for people and that are making them happy in the present and that feel like may make them happy down the road, then why would you change that?
Well, and it's also, you know, the advice is to say, and the statistics to say, it's not the end of the world if it isn't going great and you have to end it, you know?
Like, absolutely not. Right.
You know, like if you're in a bad relationship, and you're not feeling well in it, like you've learned something. That's the whole 20s mindset. Okay. Live and learn, but like, don't forget what you learned for the next thing.
Right. Well, and if you think it stinks to end it now, try ending it in 20 years when you have three kids and a mortgage, that's really going to stink. And so, but I've had people, I had a client one time, she was dating someone very seriously and she felt like the engagement was just around the corner and it probably was. And she said, you know, I just feel like my second marriage will probably be my good one. And I was like, hold on, no. Okay. What more do we need to have said here? Like, this cannot happen. And not because I saw something that, you know, she couldn't see, but I was listening to what she was saying. And what she was saying was, this relationship isn't making me happy. I'm just afraid to end it and get back out there and start over. But I think she was 27 at the time, 28. And it's a lot easier at 28 than it is at 38.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's, all of that stuff is true. It's hard to like weigh right now how I feel, not knowing will I feel better in the future.
Right.
But you kind of have to count on it.
Well, that's, you know, to me, that's really the tough part is, a lot of couples who are happy together early on, you know, they kind of have to remember that, I mean, they're legitimately happy. They have strong relationships. It's all good, but life's going to change and things are going to become more challenging. So in the new version of The Dividing Decade, I have a chapter called 29 Conversations, and Jordana, you probably read this one, but it's sort of about like, hey, there's a lot more coming other than having sex or going to brunch or going on a trip or even meeting each other's parents. There's a lot more coming in terms of cross-country moves or having kids or buying a house or somebody losing their job. And to really talk about those things, because none of us can predict exactly how it would go, but even having the courage to talk about those issues of, wow, what do you think? Do we think we want the same things? Do we think we'd handle these things the same way?
Right. You have a list of questions that I thought was very useful and interesting for I'm engaged. So going through a lot of those, which
excellent.
He loves. Let's have a series of 42 interesting conversations.
Yeah, there's 29. Just 29.
Sorry.
But, you know, it's interesting of when do I have the conversations? I mean, of course, it's never too late. But you know what? It's never too early. I mean, I say that with an asterisk. First date, okay, probably too early. But, you know, sometimes talking about those things just in general, you know, is kind of a good way to figure out not just are we happy now, are we compatible now, but will that also be true, you know, in 10 years? And again, nobody has a crystal ball, but if you have a solid foundation, then, you know, you take what comes together.
Right. And a lot of those questions were things that you don't like, just haven't even crossed your mind at all because you've never had to think of them. But asking something like, how involved in childcare do you plan on being, is like something that would be great to find out before you have the child.
Heck yeah. Well, that's why a lot of the, I say in there before the 29 questions that there's two eras in a relationship, and it is not before you're married and after you're married, because in your 20s, 30s, before you're married and after you're married, okay, after you're married, let's say you have a traditional wedding and you get presents. Okay, cool. You've got some new pots and pans and some like new sheets, but life is the same. So the two eras are, if you have them, before kids and after kids, because then suddenly that's what really rocks your world and shifts things in the relationship. And then you suddenly ask questions you weren't asking before, not do you like the beach or the mountains, you know, or do you like Mexican or Italian, but it's who's going to, are we both going to work full time, and who's going to take care of the sick day, or how present do you want to be with childcare? And so, you know, of course, we don't know till we get there, but I think you can find out pretty early on if people have clear ideas that don't match yours.
Right. Well, the nanny will take care of everything.
You know, yeah. People do think that, but they're expensive. So, you know.
Yeah. Well, that's what I think. You had an anecdote in the book about the guy who, you know, was with his girlfriend. He was like kind of banking on her, like, I think it was like giving up her job or just being more, having a more traditional home.
Right.
But what I liked about that was that it wasn't judgmental about anyone wanting that. Mm-hmm. It was just more about being real about finding someone who's actually into, like, it's not wrong to want a more traditional family style or something like that. But it's less about right or wrong and more about figuring out if the person's on the same page as you or not.
Absolutely. I mean, I know exactly who you're talking about. And I said, you know, there's a lot of women out there who want what you're looking for, but your girlfriend is quite clearly telling you that she's not one of them. And, but he just didn't want it to be true because he liked all this other cool stuff about her, but all that, the things about what kind of household they wanted and how traditional it would be, it was going to become extremely important, you know, once they were married and had kids. At the moment, it wasn't causing that much friction, but all the writing was on the wall.
Right. And I'm sure you noticed that, like, when you look at couples who fight, they're always basically fighting about the same thing. It's just in different formats or comes up differently, but it's usually like, we'll all lead back to, right, in this case, for this couple, probably something involving that fundamental difference, right, between them.
Right. Yes. Well, that's, you know, hindsight is 20/20, and we can all look back and say, day one, I sort of knew this would be an issue, but, you know, hindsight is when you really see it.
Totally. Well, wow. This was so helpful. Thank you so much for coming on. For our listeners out there, I love The Defining Decade. You just have a 10th anniversary edition, which I really liked because it seems like very relevant. It has like stuff about Instagram on there, like social media. It's very, it feels like it was written now.
Good.
Though the book was written 10 years ago. So definitely check it out. It's helpful, not even just if you're in your 20s, but if you're in your
still
30s
relevant,
like me.
30s and beyond. Yes, yes.
So check it out. The Defining Decade by Dr. Meg J. And it's, I assume, anywhere books are sold.
Absolutely. It better be.
Thank you so much for coming on.
My pleasure. It was fun.
Okay, people, that's it for us. Make sure you rate, review, subscribe, share the episode. This was really a fun one, right, Jordana?
I loved it. Dr. J was great. And I'm excited for you guys to go check out her book. And we will be back on Wednesday with another episode.
You Up is produced by Sean Kilby and Jorge Morales Pico. Editing by Sean Kilby. Social media by Maddie Paul. Guest booking by Nicole Pellegrino. Be sure to follow at You Up Pod on Instagram and Twitter. And send us your emails to youup@betches.com. Betches.